call the meeting to order and ask if there is a motion for approval of tonight's agenda.
So moved?
Seconded.
All right. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none. Do we have any public commenters tonight? Come on up to the mic, introduce yourself.
Hi, I'm Kirti from Councilmember Robert White's office here in D.C. I just have a couple of updates that I'd like to provide to you. As you know, we had our public oversight roundtable a few weeks ago on MTPD and their policing practices with respect to communities of color. That roundtable went pretty well, better than I expected. We have a number of follow-ups that our office is going to pursue as a result of that. One being hopefully creation of some kind of civilian complaint board that would have oversight over MTPD versus just internal oversight, which is currently the case. The council members called for a need for greater diversity on the WMATA Board of Directors, which we're happy to announce that the council did approve the nomination of Ms. Stephanie Gigidby from D.C. as a new appointee to the Board of Directors. That was just approved by the council yesterday. And we have a few other follow-ups that we're going to, you know, continue to address as a result of that oversight hearing. Again, like I said, we did approve Ms. Stephanie Gigby's nomination yesterday at the council, and the council member did also release a letter to WMATA regarding the TransDev strike. So that's it. That's kind of what we've been up to. I won't be able to stay for the entire meeting tonight, so if there's anything in particular that you want me to hear about, just let me know.
Any questions for our commenter before? Andrew?
Kirti, could I ask, because I missed this, could you tell me just generally what the council member's letter about the TransDev strike, what the content was?
Sure.
Or summarize it, I guess.
Sure. So he essentially, and I think ATU published his letter because we did share it with them too, and I think they published it on their social media. But essentially he is calling on WMATA to, help facilitate a resolution between the two parties. He reiterated his concerns about some of the working conditions that the union members are reporting, the pay disparities, the ridiculously high medical deductible that they're experiencing, which is up to 20% of some of their salaries, and the safety conditions that they're reporting with uninspected vehicles and having to drive vehicles that they know are not safe or have some kind of automated issue, and to make sure that that's addressed. He also recommended that WMATA create some kind of a forum for workers under TransDev to be able to report those safety concerns directly to WMATA so that WMATA can maintain greater oversight over TransDev to make sure that they're complying with safety requirements and regulatory requirements like inspections.
Mm-hmm. Any other questions?
Just thank you for also saying Stephanie's last name out loud. Okay. I've seen it written but hadn't heard it said yet, so now I know how to say it.
I still stumble with it a little bit, but I believe it is Gigidby. She's pretty qualified. She's had plenty of work experience in her career around transportation generally.
She rides.
And she rides daily. Yes.
Good.
And we are, just to let you all know, we are prepared to swear her in, and she will be here for board activities on the 12th. So she'll be at the board meeting,
great,
depending on whoever delivers the report or whatnot.
Updated, and you know, let us know if there are specific issues that the council member is working on that we ought to be, you know,
well,
apprised of, or you'd like our feedback on.
In January, the council will be starting its performance oversight and budget oversight process for all of our agencies in the district, and so that will include WMATA to an extent. So we will be sending them a series of questions that we will expect them to return answers to for us as part of their oversight review process, and then we will likely invite them to a public hearing to ask questions about their yearly performance as well. So if you have any input or things that you would like the council member to ask.
We've got all kinds of questions.
Well, you know, you can definitely share those with us, and we will incorporate them if we think they're appropriate for the venue.
Assume we have no other public commenters. Nope, we might have one right here. Kenneth, are you going to be making a public comment?
Perhaps so. Sorry.
Well, now's the time.
I'm Kenneth Mitchell. I guess the only two comments I had was I was still kind of curious in terms of issues with smart benefits tied into being able to purchase a new unlimited pass. I've talked to like my benefits manager. I talked to someone who I guess works with them as well. I talked to or tried to reach out to someone at the DOT Transerve. Never got any response from them. But then the other thing was I was just curious if they had any information regarding, I read a few months ago, or maybe even earlier or later last year, regarding a WMATA official app that was supposed to be released by the end of the year. That's all I had. Thanks.
Well, I don't believe we have any updates for you on the app. We have about as much knowledge of that as you do. But I will say that improving the process for purchasing passes is something that we've raised previously and will continue to raise. I'm actually surprised that this is as I recall you previously.
I've mentioned it
with the federal benefits.
Yeah, like I know I went on Reddit and tried to do an informal poll and ask others whether they had any success, and some people said yes, and people said no. The thing is, it seems kind of strange because I thought Transfer was the ones who administer it to everyone, but there's some inconsistencies. Not to mention also, if I lived in New York or even if I commuted via MARC or VRE, I could purchase a pass. The only difference is the money would go on a Transfer card, which I believe is issued by U.S. Bank now. It was issued by J.P. Morgan and some other banks, but I was told that you can't do that because since I don't commute via MARC, it has to all go on my smart trip card, which means, there's some, problems with that. But it just seems kind of strange.
Okay. Andrew?
I was just going to say, I was talking to a friend of mine who does not transit-oriented development. What's transportation demand management? So kind of optimizing, trying to find ways to promote transit for situations like yours, and she has told me that WageWorks and some of the other systems just started integrating the passes into their benefit system. So, and there's also, I understand, a new website that's coming for handling smart benefits. So, I suppose we'll find out at some point, Lord willing.
I know you can actually, is it Metro Ford has a YouTube page? You can literally see how they. Whoever has access to that page, allocates, the monthly amount to someone. If they lose their card or they set up a new card, if they have transit pass non-rollover, transit pass rollover, transit in terms of just the money, monetary value, rollover, non-rollover. It's just that getting that person, whoever controls that, to actually change that seems to be the difficult part. Because clearly they use it at some point to set you up, so...
I'm happy to, raise that going forward and see if we can find out whether there's any, efforts forthcoming to at least do some additional outreach to employers and, in particular federal HR managers or benefit managers in hopes that we can better streamline that process.
Thanks.
Thank you. All right, moving on. Approval of minutes. We do have a bit of an omnibus of minutes here. I have only scanned them, but found no glaring errors.
Do you need a motion to approve the minutes as presented?
Well, yeah, unless there, you know, are friendly amendments to the minutes, or hostile amendments, for that matter.
I move that we approve the minutes.
Second.
All right, all in favor?
Aye.
Hearing no nays, the minutes are approved. We do have a guest with us tonight, along with Patrick, who I believe will be running through the AAC's recommendations that they've compiled for the procurement of the 8000 series rail cars. I sent this out to folks yesterday, I believe. But if you have not had a chance to review it, I know we've got some handouts going around, but it should also be in your packet. So without further ado, AAC.
Let me introduce Tino Calabria, who is the chair of the Bus Rail Subcommittee. And over the last, 6 months, 7 months or so, they've put together a series of recommendations based on what we of our recent history with the 7000 rail car series, and did a great job, I think, of indicating where we've been, what we recommended with the 7000 series, updating it to the 8000 series, and I think what we of course want to see are joint recommendations from RAC and AAC. A lot of our recommendations, of course, are dealing with accessibility features as they apply to wheelchairs or visually impaired or other areas, hearing impaired, signage, all that kind of thing. So, Tino, this is your show. Thank you for all your hard work. And
thank you, Pat. Let me thank you for your 25 years of service in with the Accessibility Advisory Committee. I've only been involved one-tenth of the time that he has. In any event, the idea we had was to package all the wisdom that that appears in the archives of the Accessibility Advisory Committee related to the design of the 7000 series, and to add some of the thoughts we've had about the 8000 series. Already we've alerted Lisa Woodruff and Laura Mason, two of the three top rail managers in WMATA, and we've also, in meeting Paul Smedberg when he became chair, we mentioned the fact that we're doing this and that we hope we could meet with the contractors as soon as they're named, so that before they start, they'll have some idea of what we have in mind. In many things, committees such as ours are told that something has been done, and what do we think about it? What we're hoping to do is sort of turn that around and let people know in advance what we think would be great ideas for them to consider when they go about their business. I shared earlier versions of this with your chair, Colin, and in fact, this morning I received some thoughts that we're going to incorporate. For example, in the handout, and I'm sorry I didn't have enough for everyone, but on page 3, under no bicycle signs, Colin mentioned that we could add some text about there only being allowed 2 bicycles per car, and we can add more than that. Before the meeting began, I heard some German spoken by Andrew and by Catherine, I guess. And you can't see it there, but the text is in German from the Vienna metro system. And since they've been able to put text, we'll add the kind of text that Colin had in mind. Another new thing, just below that, for example, are 2 priority seats, and these are from the Santa Monica extension to the Los Angeles line. And you can see that in addition to having a wall logo, we are recommending that, as some other jurisdictions do, that the seats also have stenciled on them in large fashion the logo for accessibility. Another thing that which is new for Metro, if you look at number four on page one, two, three, on page four, number four, the space for two wheelchairs and having nearby fold-up seats. The fold-up seats would be there so that when the wheelchair space is not occupied, they could fold down the seats and then passengers could take that. We also mentioned on the next page possibly having variable height seats, at least a couple. There are shorter folks amongst the whole population, but there are certainly some people with disabilities whose feet don't touch the floor if they're sitting on the standard seats we have now. And so I have never seen a variable height seat in any Metro that I've been in or a bus, but it might be something that they can consider. Cost may be a factor. I don't know. It'd be up to them. We also mentioned on page, I guess it is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, regarding communications, Colin suggested that we, in this part, urge them to prioritize getting the antennas fixed so that the underground system works, and we're banking on that to help in what we think would be helpful to us, learning quickly where escalators or elevators are out, and so that especially people in wheelchairs and using other mobility devices will know in advance or find out on the train and then can figure out what to do. So these are examples of what we are recommending. We will be sharing a later version incorporating some things that Colin said and anything that you have in mind. I know you can't deal with it in the time you have, but I can give you my email address and you can send it to us, and we're going to try and package it so that we are we can present it to the board at the board's Thursday meeting, and then we'll ask WMATA to arrange for us to meet with the contractors, design and construction, when they're selected. We also, in the meanwhile, would submit it to the engineers within WMATA so they could have a look at what we have in mind, too. So a
couple things I might add also. I think, didn't we have in the first row of seats, we wanted to have some armrests there? So
that's right.
Being an older person now and needing maybe leverage to get myself up sometimes, I find that very important. The other thing that I remember the RAC has also been engaged this. Part of the recommendations talk about, particularly the 7000 series, the rearrangement of the announcements on the train. Of course, we know that this is a 7000 series car. That has gone. That announcement is gone. You'll also see, and AAC was involved pretty fairly heavily with this because of an individual that fell in between the cars about a year and a half ago, making sure that you either had clamshells in between the cars so that a person couldn't inadvertently walk in between the cars thinking that they're walking onto a car because they see the light, so they think it's the inside of a car, or they have chains up there. Rearranging the way the announcements are put out so that you have the important pieces of information up there front and center, knowing what the line is, the last station that it's going to be at, what the next station is going to be and that sort of thing. So I think the RAC is pretty much in agreement with the way we want to recommend the announcements. But I think that would be worthy of a discussion, because going forward to the board with one set of recommendations is critical. The other thing that Tino said, and I agree, and we did it with the 7000 series, was they did have a mock-up of the 7000 series car before it arrived. And so we were able to go in there, and there's nothing like walking into the car and actually seeing where things like the seats, the poles, the lighting, all that kind of stuff is arranged so that you can really make good recommendations there too. And I would expect that the RAC would be very much in favor of wanting that and wanting to make sure that a walkthrough is done so they get every bit of our feedback that they can possibly get before the trains start arriving.
As Tino mentioned, I did offer a couple of initial thoughts this morning in response to his email. And with regard to the no bicycle signage, I recommended that any signage around bicycles be consistent with WMATA's policy on bicycles, which is that they are allowed, but that technically there's only allowed to be two bicycles during weekdays. Two bicycles per rail car at either end, and that there be language that says, effectively that individuals with mobility devices shall take priority in those spaces. Any thoughts, questions, comments from the group? Valerie?
I actually was going to follow up on the bicycle issue, too. And it might be a broader question because I'm wondering if you're grouping scooters in there. Lime
scooters?
Yeah, not wheelchair scooters, the other.
Yes.
Yeah. Two-wheel scooters.
You want me to?
Sure, go ahead.
So yes, and Tino has done a lot of that. I just want to I'm going to start off with where we left off at one of our meetings. And then Tino can jump in because he's got a lot more information. But we're waiting for a letter from, District of Columbia, which talks about, and they own a lot of the streets outside of the metro stations. And so they are putting together a policy of how things are going to be done within D.C. with respect to the behavior that they expect to see regarding these scooters. The AAC, in their discussions, has not seen any reason why we need to have scooters inside the facility, people riding scooters up and down the platform, taking scooters up and down the escalator or anything like that. So it's something that we feel is very dangerous. We don't see the reason for having a scooter in the cars, as you can take a scooter to the subway station, deposit the scooter in its appropriate place, get on the subway, leave the subway, pick up another scooter. That's the kind of discussion that we've had, but we are waiting for guidance from DC, and from what has been said, that guidance is pretty much in line with our thinking with respect to the scooters. The fact that they're lying around the entrances at, all over the sidewalk around the entrances. And for me, I've tripped over one or two of them, and you can really hurt yourself. For someone who's in a wheelchair and they drop it in the middle of the sidewalk, how is that person in a wheelchair going to move forward? So it's a real problem for them. Tino? You've spent a lot of time looking at this. What are your thoughts?
Well, actually, bicycles are controversial because there are instances of which they've been proven dangerous to anybody, and not just people with disabilities. In fact, the Post published a letter of mine regarding this sort of thing. But there's a way of for example, geofencing the entrances around metro stations, and possibly in cooperation with jurisdictions that have control over bus stops to get geofencing around the bus stops so that whether the scooters are standing or littered on the ground, they could be prevented from doing that very close to the bus stops. These are the kinds of things we've been talking about, but we are waiting for D.C. to come through with its policies. Mary Che's Transportation Committee of the District of Columbia is about to announce what their policies are. One of the things that I know and I'm glad to hear is that she continues to back the idea of limiting e-scooters to 10 miles per hour. They're capable of doing 25 or 30 miles per hour. And I was in Santa Monica, which is where e-scooters were born. I was there the year that they appeared on the streets magically. And on the one hand, it seemed nice to see people buzzing down the street, you know. On the other hand, I and others, when we're walking down the street, all of a sudden this thing goes whizzing by, and in some cases they've hit people and not only hurt the pedestrian, but hurt themselves, and hurt themselves badly. So this is a serious matter, and we're waiting for example for D.C. to take the lead. Alexandria, I think, has will be adopting its policy soon. Fairfax has already, so we can solicit what their ideas are too. But this is a matter of concern.
Maryland, I'll just add also, through the Vision Zero committee, is also looking to see what their policy is regarding e-scooters. And so I don't know how uniform the policies will be, and that's one of the problems. But I think what Tino says here is correct, that they do, you know, that they do provide a service. They're here to stay, but they do have to be governed, and how they're used and where they're used is going to be important for us to take a look at.
So in the interest of time, I'm going to move us beyond the scooter discussion.
Thank you.
Sort of straight into municipal policy as opposed to the 8,000 series car acquisition.
Oh, yeah.
And I don't believe that WMATA currently has a policy on scooters and the trains. And my read of the bike policy is that it outlines what types of bikes are allowed on the trains. And so I would sort of suggest that any recommendations around that be aligned with the policy as written. Other comments on the, if we have time, I'll come to you.
My point is that on the hearing impaired, when we did the mock-up for the 7,000, I'm the only one here that, besides Patrick, that went to that current, and there was, one of our members was a hearing impaired person, and Deborah Titus, and she asked if they could put announcements in case of emergency, if they could put announcements in those boards, electronic boards that they have, where they put, you know, the map where they're going, the next station is, or they put the things that are on sale or Metro and all this, you know, these announcements. And he said, I remember that the tech, the engineer there said that that was an issue of programming, that it might be able to work on, that they might be able to work on. But obviously nothing happened because, as I understand, I was told that they're not able to do that at the moment. So maybe this is something that we might discuss at the point that we are at, that they're still programming, if that is something that could be added, because her concern was that she would need somebody that talks to her in front of her so she could read the lips. Mm-hmm. And since in a case of emergency, nobody's going to stop to tell her anything, what she was thinking, oh, I like the electronic board because I could look at the electronic board and see what it is, what the problem is. So that became, as I said, what the engineer said, that that was an issue of programming, but it was left at that. So that is something that you might want to be bring up again.
I believe the addendum that you all have addresses that, does it not? The screens, if they continue from the 7000 to the 8000 series, that they do provide those types of announcements visually, right?
Yes. Okay. Yes, you're right, Carl.
And then I know you know what, but Arlington has recently approved the scooters legislation, the policy. So you might want to get in touch with Christian so that you can study what Arlington is doing.
But thank you.
It was just recently approved, I think maybe a week or 2 weeks ago.
Well, thank you. Yes.
That is correct, Lorraine. Thank you.
Arlington also pioneered the shared mobility device corrals, the scooter corrals that I know DC is starting to adopt. But getting off the scooter thing, totally off it. Tino, first of all, thank you for coming, and thank you for putting this together. This is a really comprehensive and thoughtful document, and I enjoyed reading it. I did have two questions for you. One of them was, on one of the photos, the first photo on your handout, which is the it's a London Underground articulated train. If we want to be specific, I think that's the new subsurface stock, but I'll defer to Catherine on that. And it's, you know, it's the kind of train where you can pass through between cars.
Yes.
Would that, that's question one, would that be something you all would be interested in?
As a matter of fact, we've reviewed what subway systems around the world have been doing. 75% of the systems around the world use articulated trains, open gangway trains, not one in the U.S. so far. On the other hand, New York City, within the next 12 to 18 months, will be running a pilot with articulated trains. There, from our point of view, as you can see in the picture, there's almost no gap between the train itself and the connecting piece and the platform. Patrick mentioned that one person fell in the past year. Actually, two have fallen onto the tracks, and that's because they mistook the gap between the trains and the entrance. So we have suggested that the WMATA consider this. They have not accepted the recommendations. I think history will prove eventually that there will be open gangway trains, as there will be in New York soon.
And as there are in Canada and as a matter of fact, Vienna, which takes me to my second question. Your picture of the distinct orange car, number two, that you use for no bicycle sign, the arrow is instructing people to, you know, yank the door open,
right.
So pull the lever open.
Yeah.
I know this has been something, I'm going to guess, Catherine, I know you've mentioned it certainly, and I know some other folks have as well. Push button operation on train doors, how have you all thought about that? I mean, the issue with the original version of the Viennese trains in the photo is, I imagine, if you had some issues with grip or carpal tunnel. Like you
yes.
could have issue pulling it open, but now they just use on the new trains, they have a button that you just kind of tap. How would you all feel?
You know that the subway system here, they open automatically. You don't have to touch anything for the door to open.
Well, they used to, certainly, yeah.
In many countries, though, they're activated by the passenger, either,
right.
Especially to exit the train.
Right. Well, that's what I'm thinking. Like, since we don't have automatic door operation now and won't for the foreseeable future, if they were to install, like, push button door opening on on these trains, how would...
That might be a problem for some people with disabilities.
Okay. Thank you.
Other questions or recommendations for Tino?
So we don't have, as I think everybody here knows, we don't know what the timetable is for the 8,000 series.
Right.
So we have a little bit of time to go through this report, which is what, 8-9 pages?
10 pages,
okay, yeah. I mean, a very thorough job, I think.
Yeah.
And come up with recommendations over the next little while so that we can have one group of recommendations going forward. And I think there's a pretty good rapport between Phil Posner, chair of AAC, and Colin and this committee. So I think that's feasible. And AAC would very much like to see that happen.
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. So, Tino, if you have a revised version that you want to send out, you know, later this week or next week, I'll encourage my team here to closely review it, and we can offer additional thoughts and comments.
Yeah, I'd appreciate that. And as I mentioned, we're hoping to get a fresh package to the WMATA board when it meets next Thursday. So anything you can think of, please send it as quick as you can.
Sure.
Thanks for the time.
Yeah,
really appreciate
it. Thank you. Kirti, did you have something relevant to the 8,000 series cars that you wanted to mention? Before we move on, I know that we've only got Christian for a short while on the phone. Christian, are there any items that you wanted to update us on from the board front or things that you feel like we ought to be paying attention to?
Thanks, Colin. You know, no, I don't think so. I think the agenda is really covering what I want you all to lean into is, of course, thinking about the operating budget proposal and, you know, specifically about the fair initiatives and offerings that are subject to conversation. You know, one thing that's not, presently being discussed is the option of a short trip. I'm sorry, not a short trip, a shorter duration pass product, something that could foreseeably encompass people who are here for short trips in the region. So could also serve to function is a way to provide an incentive for people to get a lower-priced option to travel on weekends. It's just one of the 30,000-foot ideas that I'm thinking about with some of my Virginia colleagues and, would love to hear some wider thought on that kind of offering that we could have as part of our fair products.
Christian, may I ask real quick, has there been any discussion about either fare capping or maybe making it possible for people to pay for the unlimited monthly passes on like a weekly or biweekly basis?
Oh, like smoothing out the payment for it?
Yeah, I know a lot of people who are lower income folks would like to and would benefit substantially from those passes but can't afford the 200
or cost. Yeah. That hasn't been discussed specifically. There has been some conversation about, what we're doing in terms of the fare proposals thus far, which definitely do provide value if you do the passes. But, that issue of the most vulnerable or the most income constrained, I should say, riders not necessarily being able to front that kind of money. So what could we do? I'll make sure we figure out how to have that conversation as part of the budget process.
I appreciate it very much.
Any other questions for Christian? Catherine?
Hi, Christian. This is Catherine.
Hello, Catherine.
What If any role does the board have in helping to encourage some sort of a resolution to the strike that is currently happening in Virginia, in your territory?
It's unclear. I think it's something that everyone has concern over. You know, we're digging into understanding the relationship between the contractor and the general manager who's, you know, entered into the contract. And, you know, I think it's certainly clear, or at least should be, that members of the board want to see that this be resolved satisfactorily at some point soon. But to be honest, we don't quite fully know where, you know, what role we as a board play in it officially.
Has the board seen the contract with Transdev? I'm specifically wondering if you know what the contingency plans are and whether or not WMATA is truly supposed to be receiving some sort of payment from Transdev for not fulfilling its contractual duties.
You know, I've seen parts of the contract. I have not, you know, and I don't have it with me, so I can't speak to, you know, how widely it's known. And I wouldn't be comfortable, just because I don't have it with me, speaking on the particular provisions that I've seen. But there are mechanisms by which, if you know, performance metrics are not met, that there can be a termination of the contract. I know that that provision generally exists, and you know that's customary for all contracts. But to the extent that the current strike and its impact on operations is affecting those metrics and could therefore allow the general manager to terminate, I can't speak to that.
Thanks.
So I know that we previously reviewed aspects of this budget presentation and discussed them, you know, rather in depth at our last meeting. John, were there specific updates that you were hoping to provide on this tonight, or... Sorry to catch you with your mouth full here.
So, and Christian knows this as well. As part of our process, we will be going to the board next week with a basically a draft docket that we'll be taking through the public hearing process. That is still being finalized as of right now. That should be released. I was hoping to have a little bit more information tonight in terms of some of our service proposals specifically. As you may or may not recall from the earlier budget discussions, there are a lot of changes proposed to bus routes, both puts and takes, I guess I'd call them. You know, we're looking at beefing up some of our more heavily used routes and unbeefing or, you know, trimming or be right. You know, either consolidating or eliminating or, you know, whatnot, streamlining routes that either are low ridership or duplicative or whatnot. And I hope to be able to provide that list to you all next week. It's still getting massaged, but obviously the board needs to have it in advance of their meeting next week. That was really the only thing that isn't in the budget document that you have before you and that we discussed last month. You know, I think everything else is pretty broad in terms of, you know, fares. I think it's all pretty much out there.
Right.
And in terms of, rail service. So there's really nothing else new except that we owe you and the public, as we start the public process, the sort of a bigger overview of what the GM's proposed budget proposes to do with... you know, how it would sort of restructure the way we provide bus service. And you'll notice I used proposed like 11 times in that sentence because it's proposed. And
right.
the board, and after hearing from the public, will do what the board will decide to do. So this is a proposal.
Yeah, I mean, I think as I outlined in the November report to the board, the three areas, I mean, in particular, that we're interested in learning more about are the bus route changes, the sort of, you know, what is currently a high level, you know, proposal to dedicate resources to improving customer service, and, you know, any additional thinking or analysis around fare changes or proposed fare changes. So, Christian, to your, you know, your sort of question earlier about whether or not, you know, we would what we would think about, you know, additional you know, pass options or short trip passes, things of that nature. I think in general, this body has been supportive of you know, broadening the scope of pass options for customers, but I think any of these options, we would really love to see, you know, any analysis that's been done on the back end so that we can better evaluate, you know, how those would play out. I think, you know, of the few things on here that really jump out to me as potentially problematic and that we've discussed to date, you know, I don't think that, and folks correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't think that there was broad support for, you know, an upcharge for onboard cash loading on buses. And I think we've historically been relatively lukewarm on weekend flat fares. But other than that, I think most of these, you know, seem like positives aside from, you know, just the general burden of an increase in base fare. Any additional thoughts on that, Rob?
Yeah, well, wow, that's loud. Yeah, I will say that I think the one thing that I did hear some critical feedback of was the increase in the peak max fare, which I don't necessarily object to, but it may need some rationalizing as to why that makes sense, because I think the perception is just going to be you're raising fares on, you know, distant riders. So to the extent, and I think that speaks to the need for more analysis and rationalizing of why these changes and how would they improve the overall fare structure, I think that would be helpful.
Yep. Yeah. Okay.
Agreed. And I know Rebecca's on the phone next to me here, but I will try to channel her as well as the rest of the group in just reiterating some of our previous comments that you know, we do continue to support, you know, any initiatives, pilot projects, what have you, that would, you know, focus on subsidizing or easing the financial burden of you know, transit passes for low-income riders.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
That's a shared priority, so thank
good,
you.
Good, good. Any additional thoughts on the budget piece, Andrew?
Christian, I would just add, Sandro, we did have a gentleman come this evening who's spoken here before, and this is an ongoing issue with folks, especially federal government workers, who, if I'm not mistaken, are about 40% of the weekday ridership,
right.
Not being able to buy the unlimited passes.
Right.
And, you know, given that the whole point of those is to drive ridership, it would be, you know, especially helpful if we could unlock those for an additional 40% of the weekday rider base. So, I mean, that would have to be a board, I don't know, GSA or someone, or transit benefit management company or whoever thing. But making it easier for people to buy the passes, including non-federal workers who can't buy them through their current smart benefits setup, just making that easier for folks to access would be a big win, I think.
Yeah, Andrew, we very much appreciate your bringing that to the board meeting. I can't remember if it was the last one or the one before, and I don't know the status of where that is in terms of WMATA staff working on it, but message heard, and we expect some follow-up you know, shortly.
I appreciate it very much.
Anything else?
All right. Thank you all.
Thank you, Christian.
Sign off, but continue to have a great evening.
So getting back into the order of things here. Well, first of all, I mean, are there any other thoughts or discussions on the budget based on the, you know, relatively limited information we currently have?
I think that, I guess I would think that this will probably.
I would think so, yeah.
And so I guess what I would request is between now and then, I mean, I'll work to get this on the agenda for January 8th, and to have somebody come that can probably give you a little bit more intelligent answers as to, you know, why we chose to do this and why we chose to do that. But if there are specific items that you are interested in, the sooner you can tell. So that they can provide, you know, so they can have a heads up to provide a more intelligent, you know, a better research.
Yep.
Would be great.
Andrew. John, I actually am curious if you could find out what they mean. It's improve customer service. This is page 32 of the packet. Improving service and customer experience. It just says improve customer service, 2.5 million. Yeah, it's in this little chart. I'm just curious what that's about and what that might mean in concrete terms.
So, yeah, I think we asked about that.
Oh, did we? Okay, sorry.
I mean, I think that is something we would want to hear more about, because that has generally been a priority of ours. I think what might be useful is if we start kind of a list for John, and I'm happy to start that and pass it around via email, and we can, you know, add on to it and you know, give John ample lead time. Right, exactly. Yeah. All right.
Well, one additional question for me with regard to the budget. If we do go with, if we, as in the WMATA board, does go through with the 25-cent surcharge for loading a smart trip on the bus, I would like to ask them, ask probably staff, what efforts they're going to put into place to make it easier to load a smart trip card off of the bus, primarily through different retail partnerships or partnerships with other community organizations. We can't just make something harder without finding another way to make it possible to do that.
Yeah, makes sense to me. All right, well, I will begin compiling that list, and I will send it around to you all, and you may have to reiterate some of the points you made here tonight, because my mind is not a steel trap. All right, we've got rush hour promise language on here. I think this is meant to be sort of a continuation of our discussion on refund policy. We did put forth to the board, you know, recommended changes to the language of the rush hour promise. John, I don't think there's been any formal response to that. But Catherine, you did dig up, not to put you on the spot, but I'm putting you on the spot. You know, you did a bit of an environmental scan for us on, you know, what other transit systems do with regard to refund policies, and is, you know, my reading of it is that
WMATA's pretty damn good.
Well, I mean, it's not terrible, but also
in that most other systems,
fare-wise,
right. So, most other systems don't provide any kind of a refund like this, in part because most other systems don't have the technological capability of knowing as easily that your trip was late, because most systems don't do tap in, tap out. So when you only tap in, that makes it much more complex to figure out how to refund somebody or whether it's necessary to refund somebody. So most systems don't have any kind of a policy like that. There was one system, and I'm forgetting now which city it was, that didn't provide a refund, but that would provide basically an excuse for you. They would provide a printed notification that, yes, the train that John Doe was on was indeed late, and that's why he's late to work, which I thought was an interesting little way to spend your technology dollars. But for the most part, WMATA is the only major system in the U.S. that does provide a refund for service that was not up to par. So as much as we complain about the rush hour promise and wish it were better, the fact that they're doing it at all puts them head and shoulders above most other systems.
Sorry, it is included in the FY 2021 budget. So I know that there was some, I asked today, you know, there was some discussion because right now it is authorized to sunset on June 30th, but it's been included in the FY 2021 proposed budget. I think, I mean, just looking back on some historical documents in terms of when we approved, what we estimated it would cost in 2017 when it was initially approved, and then when staff went back to the board in December of 2018 to re-up it, I think it's between $2 and $3 million annually. And I think that's what the budget is, and I think we're actually way below that in terms of what we actually pay out. So you're looking at, what is that, 0.1% of a $2 billion operating budget?
John, do I remember that it was $1 million dedicated to the Lyft late night subsidy program?
That I would have to check, but I might be. I think it might have. I think it was $1 million.
Well, given that sort of top line analysis from Catherine, I mean, is there still appetite among the group in pursuing additional recommendations around refining refund policy?
I mean, I think, you know, as we've talked about in the past, it's sort of what is the promise, and then how is it being packaged up and advertised? So, I mean, if there's ways to tighten the language on the existing policy, then I think that's still, you know, something worth doing, just so that people understand what they can expect, and you don't get these sort of, well, why didn't they do this or that kind of conversations.
And I was going to say something very similar, that we just should be consistent and do what we say we plan to do, and follow through on what we say we're going to do. I would encourage WMATA to continue to doing this, because it is a performance measure, and quite frankly, I think it may have some additional benefits of really encouraging maintenance, because, you know, you don't want to spend all $2 million on one day. So I think there's benefits to the promise as long as we are consistent in following through and doing what we say the promise is.
Yeah, totally agree. And I think that is what we communicated to the board. I think, you know, it may require some follow-up to say, hey, did you read that? What do you think about it? but yeah, I mean, I think previously we had, you know, toyed with the idea of, you know, developing more comprehensive recommendations for, you know, a broader refund policy based on some of the issues that were, raised at the last meeting. But, so anyways, I wanted to, you know, make sure we're doing our due diligence there. But otherwise, you know, I feel good about the language that we put forth. I hope that it's, you know, something that it is actually carefully considered and implemented.
And as the writers, we should be helping to hold WMATA accountable.
Sure, absolutely. All right. Any other thoughts on that?
If I could just interject, just to Valerie's point. We do use, so the same technology that we use to determine if you are eligible for the rush hour promise is one of our performance metrics in terms of, right, is in terms of, you know, whether or not we're, in terms of our dashboard, whether or not we're delivering on-time service, right? Other agencies, and I, I'm not sure if we still do this or not. You know, other agencies measure schedule adherence and or headway adherence and blah, 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 but that's measuring vehicles, not trips. So because we have the ability, as Catherine noted, to measure trips, we use it for the Rush Hour Promise, but it is also part of our broader performance measurement system.
I mean, I wouldn't hate schedule and headway adherence as all additional performance metrics.
Don't still do it. But there is a, you know, especially when weekend, you know, when weekend headways are 24 minutes, which happens a lot less now, but, you know, to be within half of a head, you know, the measurement was always, I think, if you're within half of a headway. So you could be waiting 36 minutes for a train and that would still count or measure, that would have still counted as on time under our old metric. So it's not awesome.
All right. This is going to be like a record-breaking meeting for us, I think. I'm really proud of that.
let's get back to the scooter discussion.
Let's not. But now is the time for new business. So with that, are there any items that folks would like to raise for new business? Valerie, Catherine, Rob, Andrew, we'll just go around in clockwise fashion.
I just wanted to thank everyone. It really has been a pleasure working with you, and I wish you good luck. And I'm still a big WMATA fan, so I'll be a WMATA fan in the future.
Yes, I was planning to make some comments that tonight is both Valerie and Lorraine's last meeting with us.
It's been a pleasure.
Well, yeah, it's been great. I think, did you and I come on at the same time? Right, yeah, so same cohort, so to speak. Yeah, it's definitely been great. And Lorraine, you were here when I got here. So.
Patrick has beat me by a whole lot of years, but I thought that 10 was enough, and he's been here 25, and now, oh, okay, so my 10 looks little now compared to his 25, so.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like 3 has maybe been enough. Well, thank you both for your service over the years. I think the writers of WMATA also thank you for, as you said, Valerie, trying to make sure we're, you know, holding the agency accountable to the degree that we have that kind of power. At least a voice, indeed. Catherine?
Well, that's actually a perfect segue to my question. How are we going to get more of us? Are we on track to appoint 3 new members to replace Lorraine, Valerie, and Clarence before January?
What do you got for that, John?
The other folks who's 2, 3, if you're interested in sticking around, all right. I may not have the 3 vacancies filled by next week's board meeting, given that it's much earlier than in the month than usual. But I will work to have people identified in advance of the January 8th meeting so that they can sort of...
So I think I've raised this on email a couple of times, but I did want to see if perhaps we could have a discussion on fare evasion in a future meeting, only because it's it sort of cuts across, you know, multiple issues, including, you know, some of the policing issues we've been hearing about. And I think it also comes up in the budget discussion, since it's about a $40 million nut, if I recall. And just based on some of my personal experience, where just yesterday the fare box was completely out of commission on a, like, double X1 bus for, like, the whole route. So I was just kind of in my head doing the numbers on, you know, what the lost revenue is. So, you know, I think, like, a comprehensive, I don't know if it's a presentation from someone or a discussion, but just talking about, you know, a few of the issues around, you know, is this really a policing issue, or is this, you know, equally, you know, maintenance and sort of good practices kind of issue?
Yeah, I would be open for you know, putting that on you know, the agenda for an upcoming meeting. I have, you know, read and heard some scuttlebutt about, you know, recent presentations on that, you know, that number of, you know, dollars lost and some potential inaccuracies there with regard to DC public school children.
Yeah, I don't buy that. You know, they do list the top 10, and it's all DC area bus routes. I mean, I think if you do the numbers, it's like 2,000 evaded fares a day on average on some of these buses, which just doesn't seem quite right. So I'd just like to dig a little deeper on it.
Yeah, thanks for mentioning that, Rob, because that reminded me that someone asked, I know actually Rebecca has mentioned wanting to have a discussion about MTPD practices, policing practices generally, but this also, you know, unrelated to policing practices, but it did remind me that someone had asked if the MTD, if the Metro Transit Police text number, whatever it is, could be printed on the back of Smart Trip cards, just for reference. I mean, if you look at if you pull up the WMATA website on your phone, it has it as one of the first options you see, but that could be something that folks find helpful. So that was one thing. The Lyft pilot program cost $1 million. It took me a second to find it. I apologize. The Google Drive app on my phone is not very good. I wanted to just say thank you, especially to Lorraine, but also to Valerie. My first meeting back in March, Lorraine and I walked a bit together, and it was a great conversation, Lorraine. You taught me a lot in a very short amount of time, and I'm going to miss you, and I'm going to miss you, Valerie, for your thoughtfulness and your, you both are very thoughtful and I appreciate it very much. So thank you both. And just generally, apropos Thanksgiving, I'm thankful to be able to serve with you all and with such a great group of folks. So thanks.
All right. So just for my benefit and John's here, potential future agenda items that I heard include, in addition to presentation and Q&A on the budget proposals, a discussion and perhaps, you know, a staff member who might be able to speak to this on fare evasion and, I don't know, either in concurrence with that or separately in Metro Transit policing policies. It might be worth getting a sense for how that Lyft pilot is going. How long has it actually been happening?
If I recall, well, I mean, it started the 1st of July last year, or excuse me, first, feels like a year. Yeah, 1st of July 2019. But if I recall from a month or two ago, only like a couple hundred folks had signed up for it. And so it was a couple hundred, like 200 or 300 maybe, if even that. And, you know, $3, how many ever nights a week they can get it, it was not a whole lot of money relative to the grander scheme of things.
But given that it's something that we sort of, you know, publicly opposed, and we are, you know, entering budget season, it might be useful to get an update on where things stand with that project. Were there other agenda items that were raised that I did not?
I have one, maybe.
Hold on, Rebecca. I'm going to go to Patrick. And
thank you. Okay. AAC was able to look at the new fare card gates on Monday. I don't know how long they were downstairs on the lower level, but I know that RAC has talked about that, and we were going to have the individual who had given us a presentation come back and talk to us more about the gates. I guess there's some audible feature with the gates with respect to if people are jumping the gates or whatever. Somebody said to me it sounded like Angry Birds, which I thought was rather bizarre. Anyway, but I think that that's probably something that the RAC needs to have input into. I kind of thought the gates were going to be taller than they were, because I know we've talked about fare evasion and all that sort of thing. But with respect to the number of sensors that the new fare card gates have, I just think it would be important for RAC to be able to get a presentation on what's being looked at, reviewed, and all that sort of thing.
Yeah, I would be interested in that.
As someone who won't be in these meetings, but I wonder if the issue on fare cards and fares and monthly passes might all go back to the way or the software that we use for fares. And when I had started, there was some kind of experiment that went very poorly because it was poorly manifested, whatever.
Experimental payment pilot.
Right. But, perhaps these problems are related, and it might be worth wondering with WMATA, are we going to keep using these same fare cards for the next 50 years? Because, you know, it seems like it's not a very flexible technology. And since there are these multiple fare problems, maybe we could take care of multiple problems with one solution.
I just remember back at the May meeting when Mr. Wiedefeld said Cubic is a bear, and I just started doodling a bear on my paper. But the Cubic ecosystem, I guess, kind of has WMATA locked in, and so I think we're kind of stuck with them for a while. But sorry, I didn't mean to jump in. And also, I think Rebecca was sorry.
Oh, yeah. Rebecca.
So I don't know if this has been brought up for, and my understanding is that the question that Colin asked is topics for future meetings. Is that correct, Colin?
Yep.
Did I hear that?
That is
okay.
Correct.
That's what I thought. Okay. So I'm not sure if someone brought up the data request that we've talked about in the past with Metro Hero folks, but has that been discussed today? No. So that's something that I had indicated that I was going to prepare some comments for, and actually my organization might even do some work on it as well, the organization that I work for. So I sent an email to one of the guys from Metro Hero. I don't know if he's there tonight, but I think that's something that we should look at putting on the agenda for early spring, and I should have something that we can sort of discuss in advance of that meeting. I just wanted to put that out there as something that is still on our, you know, radar, that we want to figure out how best to advocate to get this data to the folks that can best assist the riders. And so I'm no expert on that, and I'm long overdue for setting up a phone call with the guy. I don't even remember his name right now, sorry.
James.
Yeah, him. So we are supposed to have a chat, and then my organization has expressed some interest in possibly getting a law firm to sort of pursue those PARP requests. I mean, it sucks that we have to go through the records request to get the data that, you know, they've been waiting on for years, but I think it could benefit riders. And so I'm just keeping a pulse on that, and then just wanted to mention that. And also, just as a sort of clarifying question, maybe this is for John, and then I'll be quiet. Isn't there a requirement that these meetings have a public component for online or telephone? Because I thought that they used to have a dial-in number all the time, because I feel like we could really publicize that on social media, and folks who couldn't get there to the facility could at least participate. I don't remember. I thought that there used to be one like that, like every week. It was on the website. Is that wrong?
So
I'm done.
I don't know if you can hear me. So the meeting is posted on the website, and you can listen on the website. We have not done anything, and I mean, you know, if you all want to try this, then I'm game. There's no requirement that there's no requirement really either way about outside participation. If that's something you're interested in pursuing, then we can pursue. I think that, you know, there'd have to be some thoughtful conversations about how you would manage that, and, you know, how to say this, like how this wouldn't become A, overwhelming, and B, weaponized, and three, you know, the same six people, which, to be fair, is four more people than came tonight. But, you know, so, I mean, I think that if there's an interest in sort of figuring out how to broaden these meetings, then that's a conversation that that the group can have. I will say that, you know, we're resource constrained, and I've got two arms, so it would be you know, if there's some things we can do technologically, great. You know, I'm no tech guru, so there may be something, but it has to sort of fit within the framework of the resources we have.
Thanks, Rebecca. I think one of the barriers there is that we have the one conference line, and both our members and you know, board members use it to call in. So everyone would be on mute, or no one would be on mute, right?
Right.
So
that's the technology we use right now.
Right.
Board meetings, we have like a 500 person conference line. Only one person can talk at a time. That's just how phones work.
Right. I think that perhaps a more elegant solution, if there is in fact demand among the public to participate, you know, virtually, might be that, you know, so long as we have, you know, an online stream that is, you know, live and reliable, you know, we could, through any number of applications, have, you know, a sort of a chat where folks can you know, electronically type in questions that, you know, we can then, you know, sort of prioritize and respond to like you would do on a webinar. Right. Sure. Yeah, let's take it to Reddit. That's always a positive space. What's that? Thank you, Rebecca.
I was just thinking about this. I was, because, you know, I am active on the tweets. And, you know, I try and publicize our meetings as best I can, but not everyone can make it from Tyson's or, you know, Largo or you know, wherever they're coming from. And I was just trying to I could try and think of like a really platform neutral, so you don't have to like sign in with Facebook or Twitter or something like that. Way of like, I don't know, for folks to submit questions. Maybe we could have like a email address that they send questions into or comments into that we're, you know, keeping open during whatever, but I don't know. Yeah. I mean, there are solutions. I know there are solutions. I just have to find out what they are or write one myself. But don't make me do that, please.
Well, why don't you, pull the crowd and see if there would even be interest in such a solution.
I could start a Twitter poll. How's that?
That's what I was thinking. There you go. Yeah. I mean, you know,
I'll call my friends.
Certainly some selection bias there.
Call the Char School people and have them run a scientific 500-person sample poll.
Nope. I don't think so.
Okay. I'm going to charge you for it.
Yeah, I got all kinds of money. All right. Yes, Yvette. I don't know that we have anyone really maintaining the Facebook page. Well, yeah, Joe was maintaining it. We have the login.
Do we?
I think we do. I believe we have it.
I'll check the file real quick.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, you know, we sort of only have so much bandwidth to manage the social media, and if someone wants to, you know, to take that on, I am open to volunteers, sure, maybe. We'll get some young whippersnapper who's savvy with Facebook.
I don't have, so in the file I have the Twitter account and other stuff, and I don't have the Facebook account.
All right. Well, we'll see what we can
do. And we'll not touch Facebook with a 100-foot pole, so good luck with that.
All right. Well, I will see if I can dig that up. But I do think that we can tag on your question about police presence onto, you know, one of the agenda items around Metro Transit policing policy in general. So I don't think that'll be a problem. Any other new business or announcements for the good of the order? Go ahead, Rebecca. Yes.
I was just making sure. I didn't know. I think one time he took a month off or something. I didn't know. I wanted to confirm.
January 8th. Same time, same channel. All right, anything else? Well, with that, I will entertain a motion to adjourn.
Motion to adjourn?
Second.
All in favor?
Yeah.
All right. I think that's a record.
Happy holidays, all.